It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. This is number 428. My name is Joey. That's Len. This is the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And Len, spyware on budget Samsung phones. Who would have thunk? What's going on?
It's getting ready for some snow. How about you?
We're supposed to get a blast today. I just saw a tweet. I mean, the weather network is a bit sensationalist, but you should be prepared for prolonged traffic and service issues if you're living in southwestern Ontario.
Yeah, it's snowmageddon in some areas, not here. we're okay. We're only going to get a few inches of that. So
yeah.
It is what it is.
So, you got a snowblower?
I have an electronic one, but I haven't touched it in years.
Okay.
Done.
I have one that's gas, and I have gas in my garage, but I have not fired it up yet this year. I think you're supposed to put antifreeze in there too, or windshield fluid or something. I forget, but
no, it's a gas stabilizer if you're going to start from away, or else the carb gets gunked up and you're going to have a heck of a time starting it.
Well, I guess we're going to find out. We'll see.
It's a starter fluid.
See if that's I actually did get the stabilizer last year, so I think it'll be okay. I'm not too worried about it. I have a little bottle in the garage. Okay, this week we have a couple of big stories, obviously the Samsung budget phones thing. I told Mark we were going to talk about the YouTube subscription page being gone from the home screen on web, but it looks like it's been moved and restored. That'll be a story in the future probably, but we'll work on that. Last week's quote, I should say, life is a tragedy for those who feel and a comedy for those who think. That was by Jean de la Bruyère. Sheila got that. Congratulations, Sheila. All that French training paid off. This week's quote, go for it now. The future is promised to no one. Great quote. If you know who that was by, put it in the comments. Don't forget, you can only look at the microplastics, allowable microplastic tolerances on your K-cup box. For the answer, no Googling, no searching. And if you get it right, next round of renewals on Mark and the team. Well, shall we?
Do you have a budget phone?
No, I'm the opposite of a budget phone. I picked literally the most expensive phone in the pile. Although the more I look at some of these Androids, the new OnePlus one looks great. The only thing you have to submit to it looks like it's being spied on by the Chinese. So if you can go with that, maybe it's worth it for the extra couple hundred bucks in your pocket.
I think you're going to be spied on almost with whatever device you use. It's just which one do you want to give up to your
Tim Apple for? Spying on me or the Chinese?
Right? And even if you go and you try to like use a phone and de-Google it, so to speak, still they're able to do triangulation with your cell towers for stuff like that. I remember Canada was monitoring 31 million phones during COVID. And they were using cell towers as a way to track where people were going.
Yeah. So
you can't get away from that. If you have a SIM card that's active, like it's always going to be.
It is funny too that, I mean, you know this better than me, but Google cracking down now on de-Googling, right? They're making it more and more difficult to sideload operating systems on their newer devices. I think the Pixel 10 series, it's more or less not doable, at least at the moment.
I thought they backtracked on that, but I don't think it really matters in the end. Like if you're getting those phones, you're getting it for the option for putting on Graphene OS or some other de-Googled stuff, which basically makes it, you know, gives you the ability to prevent them from tracking some of your information. But like I said, not all, right? Like if you have a SIM card, but that's not the story we're talking about. We're talking about budget phones, these Galaxy A's and M's. And to be perfectly honest, I've never heard of these. I've heard of the Galaxy Samsung, like the S22 and like, you know, the S series and stuff. Yep. That's the stuff that I hear about, but these A&Ms, I don't know. But anyways, these low dollar phones, these budget phones, they were installed with software, which you cannot remove. And it behaves like spyware. And a lot of phones out there come with bloatware, right? This is just pretty much par for the course, but this particular one goes the extra mile and the application known as
I got to stop you. Sometimes you just land on the funny bone for me there. This is great. This spyware goes the extra mile.
They do.
Are you a spokesperson for the spyware company?
No, but it is the honest truth, right? They take this an extra notch or two. So this one, it's known as App Cloud, and the people that are behind it are Iron Source, an Israeli firm. Anyways, categorized as an advertising platform or bloatware, but you know, this is now entering into the realm of being considered spyware. And according to SMEX and the International Cyber Digest, App Cloud is not just taking up the storage, like what you have on your phone, but it's collecting user data, like biometric information, IP addresses. And furthermore, it could download and install other applications. And this is done without the user's input, without their consent. It just does it on its own. And it runs continuously in the background, and even preventing the devices from entering sleep mode. And you cannot remove it without rooting the phone. And when you root the phone, if you're trying to use it in a way that you don't want it to avoid a warranty, well, as soon as you root it, the warranty is then void. What's interesting is that these devices, these low budget, these low dollar value devices, they're being sold in places like the Middle East, North America, right? And it goes to show you that people that just can't afford, they're subjected to more potentially more surveillance. And furthermore, what are they going to use that information? I suspect it's going to be sold as a way for maybe targeted advertising, or maybe worse.
It's worse, I think.
Right. So it's now drawing people towards, you have to use or purchase a flagship device as a way to get around this. So you're forced to pay more. And it just sucks. If you just don't have the funds and you have to have a phone, let's be honest, you can't function in today's society with a CB radio. You need a phone. And what do you do if you don't have the funds? You get a budget phone, or you try to, do they still offer the phones where you could subsidize it over a period of time, like 2 years or something? Like,
they do, but like, you know, those phones, the thing is, like, on a 2 year sub, my guess is that you're not, I mean, I'm speaking for myself. I don't do the subsidized phones. I just buy mine and then sell it when I want to upgrade. And that, you know, 1.5, 2 year mark is the sweet spot. They still do offer 2 year subsidies, but they're significantly more expensive now, because either what they've done now is either say, okay, we're going to amortize the price of the phone over 2 years instead of three, obviously raises the price quite a bit. Or then the other option is you never own the phone. You rent it at a lower price and have to return it after 2 years. So that's a whole other complicating factor.
But what do they do when you return to
sell it back to the manufacturer, sell it refurb? There's tons of people are buying stuff refurb all the time, because the planned obsolescence of these phones is bad, but it's not as bad as the providers want it to be. You know, you could use, like, if I wasn't such a short attention span tech head, I would still be using my iPhone 13 Pro Max. It was a great phone, great screen, great build quality. I would argue the build quality's declined since then in iPhones, though they've added some other features thanks to the materials they're using. But like, it's clear that these things are lasting longer. And now that Apple's actually forced by law to, like, replace batteries and stuff in these devices, why wouldn't you just keep it, right? So they have to incentivize people. Here, we'll give it to you for cheaper, but we want it back after 2 years, and we'll sign you up for something that costs $20 more a month or whatever.
Yeah, what's $20 more a month these days? Inflation is just eating away at that and making it easy. You know, work an extra half an hour or an hour,
yeah, whatever that can be.
But, yeah, you know, I still have a tablet that I use. And it's like, I think it's approximately 10 years old.
Wow. And how's the battery?
I had to replace it 3 or 4 years ago. It's so old, Joey, that the YouTube app doesn't work, that YouTube doesn't allow it because the Android is so old in that. So I have to use
Vanced or whatever.
Like NewPipe or something, I forget.
Yeah. NewPipe's good. Yeah.
So it doesn't have anything on it, just NewPipe. And it doesn't even have a Google ID. Is I like, why would I have anything? So it's right. All I use is just for watching YouTube, and it works fine.
Nice.
And but yeah, it's now the end of life. So
do you know what's interesting about this story? That I think the probably the most interesting thing, and it's not really mentioned in the article, but I don't expect like Malwarebytes to talk about this because it is a little bit political. It's been reported that the phones are predominantly sold in West Asia and North Africa. If you look at the number of countries, or the list of countries that you can consider West Asian and North African, you know what you notice? A lot of those countries are in the middle of or on the brink of rebellion. And we know from experience that governments like to be able to see what people are doing, typing, saying, who they're calling, where they are, stuff like that, as part of their, let's say, efforts to maintain power. And so when I see stories like this about those countries, this is not an accident, right? This is a clear, intentional invasion of privacy to keep people from protesting and developing into, sort of dangerous subterranean anti-government groups, right? It seems to me to be the case. And don't forget too that, over there, what is the likelihood that if you root your phone and void the warranty or whatever, break your phone, there's not going to be somebody who goes at the like sort of, vendor retail level, oh, this guy's bought two phones in the last 2 weeks. He says he broke his other one trying to do something to the rootkit or with the rootkit. It's clearly an attempt by these governments to say, hey, we got to keep an eye on things because things are about to get kind of rocky over here. The waters are getting more turbulent. We got to make sure people are not doing anything they shouldn't be doing as far as trying to upend our power structures. I think that's obvious. I don't know what you think, but I think that's obvious. Well,
if you're in North Africa and the only thing you could purchase because of your purchasing power is one of these budget phones, I would just simply find any way to make it to Europe. And as soon as you land, they give you the newest iPhone. So that already is a
huge upgrade. Go over on the boat. Yeah, go over on the boat. So,
well, I don't know why I'd stick around. I'd go for that cruise across the Mediterranean and to pick up the new iPhone. That's a huge win.
Yeah, and, big dub.
Free money too at the same
time. PS5 and a hotel when you land. It's nice.
Yeah, $7,000 a month, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, let's talk about Windows 11. And my God, it's having some real problems with this latest update.
God, I know.
Version 11, 24H2. And Cybersecurity News is reporting that there is a nasty bug in the shell components like the start menu, the task bar, the file manager, the system settings, the stuff that's kind of we don't tend to use except for every darn day, right? And some of this fails to launch or crash repeatedly. I'm not sure if you've experienced this. You're a Windows 11 user.
I am. I haven't experienced it, but also the rigs we have, like I say we because they're CBP rigs. We have a 3080 card in one, which is like the workhorse card of choice for gamers over the last like 5-6 years. And on benchmark, that gets yacht or cruise ship designation. The one we just bought is a 5070. It's the size of like a winter tire for my car. And that one has a UFO designation on benchmark. It's like out of this world fast. That said, where I do notice it? On the laptop. We both have the Asus laptop. And that Asus laptop has a 30 series card as well, or a 40 series card from NVIDIA. It's fast, but it still has hangups. And specifically the one I noticed, Len, is the File Explorer, which Windows and Microsoft are now preloading on startup in order to stop the visual hiccup of the window not loading the contents of your drive or your document folder or whatever when you first open it. Talk about an abdication of technical savvy. Like you've given up, you're preloading those basic features in your OS. It's a disaster, total disaster. It's
so complex, the operating system. And let's be honest, it's loaded with bloat, right? If I compare my Linux, I use it every day on my machine. It's to do the updates, to do the load up, everything is just so much faster. There's zero bloat on it. Not to say that it's the perfect operating system, but in my opinion, it's far better than Windows. At least it gives me the opportunity to have it run the way I want. But either way, right, back to this problem, it's not just the start menu and the File Explorer and stuff like that that's having issues. There's also the system file checker that has a bug in it. It's also falsely flagging system files as corrupted. Right. Even if you try repairing them, the scans will report the same corruption. Yeah. And it's just an endless loop of false positives. Not only that, there's a cache glitch, 8.63 gigabyte cache glitch. And if you try to do the disk cleanup, it claims that there's 8.63 cache of Windows files, Windows updates that need to be cleaned, and it cannot be deleted. Microsoft is saying this is just a display bug. The space is not actually being occupied, but the system is reporting it as undeletable. And so also gamers are getting the blue screen of death from the anti-cheating stuff that's included in stuck games like Fortnite and whatnot.
Yeah.
So like this is, let's be honest, if you're going to use Windows, it's primarily for gaming. you're not going to use it for, you know, rendering. Like you go to a Mac or stuff.
We don't use a Mac for video rendering. We don't do, we don't do a lot of video editing necessarily. Like we're not changing colors and stuff like that in video. I'm just looking for as much horsepower as I can to clip, render. But yeah, you're now, right.
Going into the weeds here. I mean, without talking, isn't the Mac better suited for that or no? I just don't know. I always assume.
I don't know either. Honestly. It's hard to say. I've not tried a Mac for our workflow. Maybe, I don't know if there's like an Amazon Prime Day or something, I'll get a Mac laptop. But for now, like these work fine. But you never know. Like if we started doing more like shorter clips or whatever that we did ourselves instead of trying to tweak some of the stuff that's given to us, then maybe we would go that direction. People seem to like the Macs.
Get Windows installed on a Mac. Get all the junk that comes along with the Windows 11.
Max update. Out. Get the Dell Windows 11 suite of bloatware. That's the maximum bloat.
Remember those 310 Dell commercials back in the day?
Oh my God, of course I do. Now, do you remember the Canada Computers commercials from back in the day where they did a version of that song by Alice DJ, Better Off Alone? And it was, do you think you really want a clone? And it was like talking about a knockoff computers. That was vintage early 2000s computer purchasing. Call the number and get a PC. So good.
I'm almost at the point I'd rather use Windows 2000 than Windows 11.
NT, baby. I'm an NT maximalist. or XP Service Pack 2. Like everyone loves SP2. Windows XP, that was legendary too. Put it on a t-shirt, man. What are we waiting for?
I'm just waiting for Microsoft to fix this. It's not like Windows 11 is old. Like they're trying to push this on all Windows 10 users. And so like this is their flagship operating system.
Yeah.
And it's having issues. Like it's not like Windows 12 is around a corner. I haven't heard anything of it.
No, it's a while. We should point out before we leave this story that Satya Nadella, their CEO, said that 30% of their internal projects are done with AI generated code. So between the H1Bs and the generated code, you've got a lack of competency over there. And this is the result you get. Keep bringing in H1Bs, best and brightest, right? And see if your file manager loads in less than 10 seconds.
Apparently their bathrooms are pristine. They're not used. And let's talk about
editor. This. Editor, cut that out.
No, man. I mean, everybody, you know, they just keep working. They don't have to go to the
washroom. Right. It's a grind.
So yeah, let's talk about the third party stuff. Often we mention it, I think it's every week, and this is another third party vendor which has ties to the US financial sector and
government, the US government. Just say the G word. They have ties to the US government. They're an arm of the government. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, so these major Wall Street firms, they got owned, and Citius AMC, that's a New York based technology provider that's used by a crap load of banks like JP Morgan, Citibank, Morgan Stanley, a whole bunch of others. And it's used to help to manage real estate loans and mortgages. Well, it's confirmed that unauthorized access to their systems happened on November 12th, with hackers were able to steal information tied to clients' relationships, such as like client records, legal agreements, and stuff like that. And Citius AMC says that no encrypted malware was involved, and that the data belonging to some clients, just some, may have been impacted. That's not really a telling sign. The fact that some clients were impacted is pretty damning to me.
Which clients, Len? Any big names on there? Maybe someone like Epstein? Was he noted in the files? He's banking with them for 15 or 20 years or whatever?
I'm waiting to see Sailor's on that list. That's what.
Oh, Sailor. Hey, okay.
Yeah, that's my wild card here.
Interesting.
But either way, back to because that just the theft was stolen and there was no disruption in the systems, they're thinking that the motives behind this was not to do like a ransom type of deal. It's just theft, use that for whatever purpose they may be selling a dark web or who knows, but that's what people are thinking. And the stolen information includes like social security numbers, bank account details, loan applications,
yep,
stuff like that. You know, like
that's important data. That's about as important as it gets. And like when we're doing data leaks on this show, that's a pretty good haul. If you were playing Arc Raiders, that would show up as a legendary item in your loot.
Is that yellow?
Gold most of the time. Gold, these days.
Okay. I have never even looked at it. I just anyways. So again, going back to this third party, when you're dealing with third party operators, third party software vendors, if you're looking at where's the weak link in the chain, it potentially could be that. And you have no control over it. When you're outsourcing something like that and there's an issue, it's not like you could simply patch it. You have to ask somebody else to patch it and roll it out. And the FBI said they're investigating this, but you know, the horse has left the barn. Like closing that barn door does nothing at this point. Like they could find the perpetrators, they could figure out what's been done, but it's gone. That information is out in the wild. What are they going to get out of this? Like, I don't know.
The legal settlements could be full of juicy details, but as far as like selling this data, it's probably run of the mill. Honestly, I know we said it was a good haul, but this is kind of the thing that you get, and it just gives you another piece to the puzzle for someone's ID, right? Or if you want to commit identity theft or significant fraud, this will get you part of the way there. The thing that's interesting to me is it seems to me like CITIS, the CITIS AMC, CITIS AMC, not really mentioned as far as being investigated, being looked at, under scrutiny, nothing like that, right? This is the kind of thing that you know, if you were allowing it to happen, you could probably turn a pretty nice profit. You know, don't you think?
Don't let it happen again. That's all they'll tell them.
Hey, it's a little smack on the wrist there. Let's go get some pierogies. Don't let it happen again.
Don't forget, when it's election time, you know who to donate to.
That's right. You know what I mean? Like, I am jaded now in a way that I certainly was not like 5 or 6 years ago, but I look at these stories. My first thought all the time is inside job. Is that bad? Is that unreasonable?
Very well, wait, maybe. Who the heck knows?
Unbelievably secure system like this.
Yeah, secure. Clearly it's not.
Only as secure as the biggest credit card bill that one of your staff has, probably, right?
Yeah, as soon as they get compromised. Then here's another one. This personal information about potential jurors in the United States and maybe Canada as well. Like this goes to show Tyler Technologies, they did a terrible job at setting up these websites for their jurors. And so like as a result, there's a security flaw that it was found. Like, it's not like it's the most technically challenging security flaw, and I'll explain why. But a lot of names were exposed for potential jurors, and it's dozens of juror websites, and basically allowed an attacker to get information on cases in California, Illinois, Michigan, and a whole bunch of other states. The way it was done was an absolute joke. So since jurors are issued a unique number to identify them, right? And these numbers are usually signed to them when they are entered into the system. So, and it's done sequentially.
Yeah.
If you have one number, just add one.
Keep trying.
And the beautiful thing about this, you could brute force this thing.
Yeah.
And the site didn't stop from flooding the pages with requests. So it didn't take much time or to set up an attack to get all this information.
No preventative measures in the back end. Crazy. I know. So this is a battle.
The jurors, we're talking the names, their full names, their date of birth, occupations, email addresses, cell phone numbers, home addresses. You basically have a snapshot of that individual. And they say, according to Tyler Technologies, they say that they have developed the remediation to prevent unauthorized access and are communicating step with their clients.
That's good.
What could you give them? It's not like you give them credit monitoring service and away you go. Maybe since this is dealing with jurors, give them like a next time they, if they ever get caught in crime, a get out of jail free card or something like that. This way they're just... But the reality is
free parking for life or something like that.
Yeah. If you know the name of a juror that's on a particular trial,
my God, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
You can manipulate the outcome of that trial.
Yeah.
And that's scary. And it doesn't take much to manipulate. You just threaten family, threaten them, and just do it. And people, they'll just bow down to it. And instead of somebody being guilty, oh, they're not guilty. Why? Because I don't want my family to get whacked. This is brutal.
Very simple to see the problems here. Like you mentioned, it's dangerous for the people who are exposed. But I just want to like circle back to the brute forcing thing. How is there not a measure in place to prevent that? Given that you're numbering sequentially, this is like the most rudimentary security feature you need to have in your back end, and they don't have it. It's almost insane. Like this is like, that's criminal negligence, in my opinion. You know, you had one job. Now, the best part about this is how many times over the course of the last few years doing this show and even like on CBP, when we talk about government and government contracting specifically, how many times does the best company for the job get the contract for something like securing these databases? Almost never, right? Who gets it? The lowest bidder. And so between the sort of lack of technical competence at the procurement side and the ability of these guys to underbid, knowing how to quote unquote play the contract game with government industry, government agencies, this is the result you get. And this is why, by the way, I think this is going to continue to ramp up, because as overseas firms become more capable of offering onshore services, let's say, you're going to get a shitty product. You know, that's what's happening here. It's going to continue to happen. I expect it to ramp up even more, especially at the municipal level where there's not a lot of money in the trough, right? It's more difficult to take debt and do deficit spending and all these things. So this is what you get. Boeing is not calling for municipal contracts. You know, I know Boeing obviously wouldn't do this one, but the Boeing equivalent is not calling for these muni contracts. And so instead you get something that's, you know, underwhelming, underperforming, and then ultimately unsafe.
Joey, you know the name Shai Hulud?
No. Can you spell it? I mean, you're looking at it probably, but... No.
You never watched or read Dune?
I've never seen Dune, no.
Well, it's a great
series
of books.
And yeah?
The movie was fantastic.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so it's the worm that the locals name it Shai Hulud. That's okay. What they call it. So the name is attributed to the Dune books. So Anyways, back in late November of this year, a supply chain attack hit the NPM accounts of, well, we're talking Ethereum name services and Zapier and stuff like that. And this is the Shai Hulud malware campaign. And the Ethereum name services, you know what that does? You know what that's for? By the way, I had to take a look.
I think it's not DNS on Ethereum? I thought it was.
Very much that.
Yeah.
It ties a name to a particular wallet address. So it's easier to do by name, and it just ties it to, you know, the wallet address, which is very hard to remember. So The good news about that, the ENS packages, they were compromised, but they were never downloaded with the infected NPM packages, and they were effectively removed. I'm going to sleep better at night knowing that this is the case.
You big ENS guy, yeah?
Oh, huge, man. And so everyone with those special ETH domains that points to your wallet, you're good to go, because your staking is going to be okay. They're going to continue on with the merge, splurge, and whatever else. Merge, it's all going to come out. So.
I haven't heard any good words from those guys lately about their... what do they call it? They call it a protocol still, or are they even too big for their bridges now? I have no idea.
So back to this malware stuff, it was infecting the NPM packages. And it was, once it was installed, it would install and execute its main payload. And there was also a secret scanning tool to find data in a victim's environment, including NPM tokens, NTM tokens, GitHub personal access tokens, cloud infrastructure keys like AWS, Azure, and so forth. And once these credentials, somebody gets access to it, they can then use that even further. It's incredible how much they could steal from that. But this, when they got it, they were moving the credentials to a randomly named GitHub repository created by the attackers. And they're all tagged with the same description, the Shai Hulud, the second coming. And the worm was designed to self-replicate. So it steals the information, it publishes it, and then it spirals out of control and just keeps going from there. Included in that was something very innovative. It's a kill switch. So if the malware failed to authenticate the spread, it would simply just wipe the user's home directory.
Yeah.
And over 20,000 malicious repositories were created within an hour. Incredible. This stuff is nasty. Now, Zapier said that they tell people they should revoke the NTM tokens, the GitHub tokens, the cloud, like revoke that entirely and start from scratch. Like this, if you are one of those users and you think you've been
very cumbersome fix.
Well, what are you going to do?
You're stuck. You have to do it. You have no choice. Yeah. This is, I don't know enough about the tech here to say for sure, but does this not strike you as something akin to like a MetaMask attack where you're giving permissions on some, you know, platform and ending up with a bunch of different problems, infecting a bunch of different, I always use the word silos, but it fits here, infecting a bunch of different silos on your PC or in your sort of online presence. And then you wind up having to either get rid of everything or start again. And in the meantime, you lose a bunch of stuff and have tons of inconvenience. And I just like, I can't understand for the life of me at this point. Given the
NPM is a very like, important packaging.
So. Yeah, but like, why are people still messing around with this stuff? You know, like why not just use traditional tech for these sorts of things?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. It's above my head, and you know, I'm not equipped to parse the research. But it seems to me like these things are still. I'm not saying they'll never be better, but there's certainly still a work in progress. You know.
It's a work in progress.
It's dicey to. It's totally, man. It's dicey to like hang your hat on all this stuff. Anyway, yeah. Go ahead. Okay, last one.
Yeah, these LLMs. It's a work in progress because people found like very creative ways to get in, to jailbreak it, and they're using poetry essentially to bypass safeguards.
Crazy.
They're just essentially just using plain language inputs, right? And they're converting the poetry form into a universal single turn jailbreak tool. And this is used for stuff like Google, OpenAI, Anthropic. And they tested 25 models, and the average success rate was 62% using this. And simply just using poetry and just using specific words in there. Now, everybody knows singing is also like a type of poetry. And I remember Mellow Bucks. We talked about Mellow Bucks in the CVP not too long ago. I'm wondering if you could just input Mellow Bucks lyrics into, say, Google's Gemini and come up with something. So, like, some of the lyrics, I'm going to read it off. I found the keys to getting paper, and now I'm locked in. Hit the club. Your homie bringing hoes. We bringing Glocks in. He got three guns up on his page, but them is not his. And if we ever fall or drop a man, then we're going to drop 10. I wonder if putting this into the Gemini or ChatGPT will result in a jailbreaking and we're able to bypass the safeguards that are put. Oh, no way, man. You got to be very specific with your poetry. So you just can't put it in roses are red, violets are blue. You got to find the right thing to put in there. But nonetheless, this shows there's new weaknesses within this. And it's very, very effective, but you have to be very specific in the wording you have to provide. And I found it to be funny more than anything else. And I'd love to see what happens if you plug in Mellow Bucks. It's got to go like, what the heck are you talking about?
This is a fun story because it's yet another example of how, like you said, you know, to lead off, the LLMs are a work in progress. I just want to say, take something right from Mark's article here. The guardrails are distribution bound. This is the best way to look at this story. And I'll read his text. Most safety tuning has clearly been optimized for plain old prosaic English. Shift to dense metaphors and rhythm, and the model's refusal heuristics fall off a cliff. It is mid-curved. The guardrails are mid-curved. And anything on the outside there, whether it's something stupid like a poem or something, you know, a little smarter, like intentionally breaking these things with, you know, workaround words and safe words and stuff like that. They're not ready for prime time, clearly. And I would also point out that right now there's actually not that many people actually trying to use these things in this way. I don't know how many people are using LLMs, but I'm guessing that most of them are either doing academic work. If you're Deloitte, you're getting them to make up research for some provincial government in Canada. And if you're a student or just a kid like sitting in his bed, like maybe you're getting it to make dumb AI images of a teacher you hate or something. But when these things really ramp to scale, there's going to be a lot of people trying to break these. And I just think the cat and mouse game is actually going to go the other way. It's going to lean toward the users being able to do it over time, especially if the models are quote unquote dynamic in the way they learn. There will be new holes that open up as the LLM data grows. So I expect this to continue. I want to point out too, in the time we've been recording this show, that Carney and Danielle Smith have signed a new pipeline deal.
Yeah, they were talking that they had a framework done yesterday.
signed so, now. Huge. That's huge. So I don't know how the BC government and the natives are going to fuck this up. Sorry for swearing, but they'll find a way. They'll find a way. So can't wait.
Well, just plug it into ChatGPT
as a poem. How can I, how doth I find method?
I have the wording here.
Okay.
Eye candy, piece of art. He want to lick my tats. Bear with me, bae. I want to be high. I ain't good at texting back. There
you
go.
That should do it. Mellow. Thanks for coming, everyone. Listen to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe to the YouTube channel where we are getting more plays than ever. And don't forget to go to accessofeasy.com for the rest of the stories every week. Until next time, take care of yourselves.